भागवते वासुदेवाय
भागवते वासुदेवाय
नमो 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 भागवते वासुदेवाय
नमस्कृत्य
नमस्कृत्य
जय नरोत्तम देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं
देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं
ततो जयामुदीराय
ततो जयामुदीराय
महिष्टाप्रयेषु पादरेषु
महिष्टाप्रयेषु पादरेषु
नित्यं भागवते सेवया
नित्यं भागवते सेवया
भागवतेतां श्लोके
भागवतेतां श्लोके
भक्तिर्भवति नाष्टके
Before
signing Srimad Bhagavatam, which I bring into Congress, let us offer our respectful obeisances unto the personality of God of Narayan, of the Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, of the Mother Sarasvati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasa, the author. By regularly hearing the Bhagavatam and rendering services unto the pure devotees, all that is troublesome within the heart becomes practical, destroyed and misdemeanor. And transcendent loving service unto the glorious Lord, whose praise of transcendent hymns comes into being established as new work of God. So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 9, Text 46. Yasha Prashana Bhagavan Gunayara Matra Yad Aribe Hari Tasmayana Mante Bhutani Nam Namapa Ivasvayam Saruchi, the young mother of Dhruva Maharaj, seeing that the innocent boy had fallen at her feet, immediately picked him up, embracing him with her hands. And with tears of feeling, she blessed him with words, "My dear boy, long may you live." And to one who has transcendental qualities due to friendly behavior with the Supreme Personality of God, all living entities offer honor, just as water automatically flows down by nature. Prabhupada by Srila Prabhupada. The question may be raised in this connection, why Saruchi, who was not at all favorably disposed towards Dhruva, blessed him, saying, "Long may you live," which means that she also desired good fortune for him. The answer is given in this verse. Since Dhruva Maharaj was blessed by the Lord due to his transcendental qualities, everyone was bound to offer him all respect and benediction, just as water, by its nature, flows downwards. A devotee of the Lord does not demand respect from anyone, but wherever he goes, he is honored by everyone throughout the whole world with all respect. Srinivasacharya said that the six Goswamis of Vrindavan are respected throughout the entire universe because a devotee, having pleased the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source of all emanations, automatically pleases everyone, and thus everyone offers him respect. We close that door, the noise from the kitchen. Suruchestam samutapya paravanatam ahakam parishva jacha jivate bashpa gagadaya gira yasya prashanya bhagavan Gune Maitre Radhi Bihari Tasmaina Manti Bhutani Nimnamapi Vasvayam. Saruchi, the young mother of Dhruva Maharaj, seeing that the innocent boy had fallen at her feet, immediately picked him up. Embracing him with her hands and with tears of feeling, she blessed him with the words, "My dear boy, long may you live." Unto one who has transcendental qualities due to friendly behavior with the Supreme Personality of God, all living entities offer honor, just as water automatically flows down by nature. Om Agyanata Mirandasya Jananjana Salakaya Chakshuru Ngalatam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurubhai Nama Shri Chaitanya Manombistam Shapadam Yenam Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gita Mayam Dadati Svam Vidantikam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda
Shri Advaita Gaurava Shri Vasudeva Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So Saruchi, the younger mother of Dhruva Maharaj, seeing that the innocent boy had fallen at her feet, immediately picked him up, embracing him with her hands, and with tears of feeling, she blessed him with the words, "My dear boy, long may you live." So Saruchi, this is the story, of course, of Dhruva Maharaj returns home. So originally, Dhruva Maharaj left home because of the insult of Saruchi. We can understand that Dhruva Maharaj was extremely disturbed by the words of Saruchi, by the behavior of Saruchi. So much so that he performed incredible austerities. Those austerities were so powerful that even the demigods became disturbed by the breathing. In other words, the Dhruva Maharaj choked up the whole universe. We cannot even comprehend of such a powerful personality that by his austerities, even at the age of 5, he was able to choke up the entire universe. So that gives you an indication of the power of his austerities. All of those austerities were performed on account of the insult of Saruchi. Now Dhruva Maharaj is returning home. And we see previously that when Dhruva Maharaj, when he returned, then Dhruva Maharaj, the foremost of all nobles, first of all, offered his obeisances at the feet of his father and was honored by his father with various questions. He then bowed his head at the feet of his two mothers. The Prabhupada explains in this purport, it may be questioned why Dhruva Maharaj offered his respect not only to his mother, but also to his stepmother, due to whose insults he had left home. The answer is that after achieving perfection by self-realization, and seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face, Dhruva Maharaj was completely freed from all contamination of material desire. So this answers the question that when Dhruva Maharaj became free from all contamination of material desire, then automatically all bad qualities left his heart. So as it says here, that feelings of insult or honor in this material world are never perceived by a devotee. This is important. Feeling of insult or honor in this material world are never perceived by a devotee. So obviously, this is giving us an indication of the qualities of a devotee. A devotee is free from all duality. The material world is full of duality. The nature of the material world is that it is dual. Dual. Dual means two. Just like when you have dual, you have two people shooting each other, isn't it? Dual, two, dual. So, therefore, this is one of the important studies of spiritual life. Everyone in the material world is greatly harassed by the duality of this world. We are always constantly being exposed to the hostile, antagonistic nature of matter. Matter itself is incredibly opposed to our happiness. Everything we experience here is in opposition to our actual, what we call our material desires. Everyone is full of material desires. All of us have got millions and billions of desires. We have had these desires since time immemorial. We have been passing through billions and billions of bodies. sometimes sleeping in these bodies, sometimes waking in these bodies. But we all have the actual experience. Whenever you have a body, you have things which are related to the body. Happiness. Nice, lovely, curd subjis. Nice, comfortable beds. And Prabhupada said sometimes bed partner also. We like all these comfort situations, comfortable situations. We have so many desires to enjoy. This aspiration of, as it says, prakriti kriyamanani, guna karma sarvasa, hankar vimuratma, karta ham iti manate, that these aspirations and desires are all the interreaction of the modes of material nature on the mind. Sometimes the mind is passionately involved in pursuing. What did they say in America? Every man has the right to pursue happiness. This is the fundamental principle of the material world, that every one of you have the principle to pursue happiness, the fundamental rights. It is your right. It is your God-given right to pursue happiness. You must become happy. What the fools don't understand is, why do you have to pursue something? Why do you have to pursue it? They don't question. He said, just like Prabhupada said, they're seeing, but they're not seeing. Why do you have to pursue something if it's natural? Does it make any sense? Something which is natural. Just like air. Air is natural, so you don't pursue it, do you? You naturally need air, and the body is created to consume air. You have these big nose things here. Air is coming in, isn't it? You find that in nature, generally speaking, things are there which are needed for the body. But there's a little problem. There's a scarcity. You see, due to circumstantial situation, things become scarce. Huh? So therefore, there's this duality. In other words, material energy itself, somehow or other, is working in a very mysterious way that it doesn't quite give us what we want. It doesn't quite give us what we want. And this is a big problem. Because generally we find that anything we really want, we have to pursue. We have to pursue. That is called work. The word work basically means effort, isn't it? Kartaham iti manyate. Kartaham means I am the doer. By my effort, I have gained something. I have gained a higher situation due to my efforts. So therefore, this mentality is always there. Let me make an effort in a certain direction. You see? We try to pursue happiness in the form of so many different varieties, but we all find that everything's an effort. Just like a man is single, and it's an effort to look after his single body. But then he decides to take on another body, a wife. And then he's got double trouble. Then the wife has four kids. He's now got five people to look after. And all he really wanted was a little happiness. That's all I wanted. I wanted a little company to sit there and watch television. Just so we could talk about things. So we find that in the material world, any little desire causes so much inconvenience. There's so much inconvenience. The actual experience of the material world is what is that word in Sanskrit? That which can never be achieved. There's a Sanskrit word for it. I can't remember the Sanskrit slurs. But basically, the very nature of Maya is that enjoyment within the material world is that thing which can never be achieved. Can never be achieved. No one can actually say that they become happy. They can say that I feel better this morning than I did yesterday. And things are not as bad. Things are getting better in Birmingham, Prabhu. Things are getting better. We're improving. So we can never say we're perfect. We can never say things are perfect. We can always say things are getting a bit better. My mind doesn't disturb me so much now. I'm getting better with my japa. And I read a little bit even. You see? So similarly in the material world, the same thing is going on. I got a better job. I'm no longer the toilet cleaner. I'm now the cupboard cleaner. I clean the toilets in the cupboard, but pay has increased. Instead of £4 an hour, they've given me £5. Things are looking up. Things are getting better. and another man is thinking, oh, the stocks are getting better this month. Things are, the business investments I made are getting better. And then the person in the family is thinking, oh, the wife doesn't nag so much now. We don't have so many fights. Things are getting better. They're looking good. So this is always the nature, never quite perfect, but always in the future. Prabhupada calls this post-dated check psychology. We've always got something better happening. It'll get better. Things will improve. They do improve. We should look on the positive side. Therefore, you have all these gurus going around the world telling how, you see these books in the bookstand, you know, how to improve yourself with eight different processes and how to, seven better steps to get perfect and seven different diets to make you slim and seven different things you should do before you wake up. And, so much garbage. So much stuff. All promises, all promises. But these are all simply the different dualities of the material world. Because we are suffering so much, actual different types of, what do we call them? Inferior experience. Therefore, we're always thinking that by some adjustment, by an adjustment within nature itself, just like Krishna says, as the coming and going of the seasons, now we're entering into the good old British winter. So people will start to feel the chills and the pains. But there'll be summer later on. So we can look forward to our next summer holidays and book them up early so that we can at least look forward to that. So there are so many things like that, human psychology. These are all the different dualities, sukha dukkha da, that there's always some sukha, little bit of pleasure, bit of dukkha. So Dhruva Maharaj is a very nice example, because as a young boy, he was from a very powerful line of kshatriyas. He's coming from the Manu, he's coming from the big dynasty. So therefore, he's not an ordinary boy, he's a powerful personality, even though he was only 5 years of age. And he became insulted. He became affected by the words of his stepmother. She wouldn't allow him to go on the lap of the king, King Uttanapada. So he became very upset, angry. His chest was shaking. Kshatriya means to become angry. Kshatriya is by nature. If a Kshatriya can't become angry, he can't be a Kshatriya. It's no good going on the battlefield and embracing everyone and kissing him. You have to fight. You have to kill. So kshatriyas have this certain shakti. They have this kshatriya energy. So therefore, Dhruva Maharaj performed great austerities. And he had a very fixed purpose, aka Kula Nandana. He was fixed, one single-minded intelligence. Even the great Narada Muni tried to dissuade him. He said, you are just a young, gentle boy. You're a delicate body. How can you stay in this jungle? How can you perform these kind of austerities? So Narada finished and said, you have spoken. Guru Maharaj said, you have spoken very nice instruction for Brahmana. These are good things. But I cannot hear these things. If you can kindly give me some information by which I can take the kingdom of my father. You see, he had a very strong idea to take the kingdom. Not only he wanted the kingdom of his father, he wanted a better kingdom than his father. So he was full of material desire. Full of material desire. So we learn something from that. It is not bad to be full of material desire as long as you go to Krishna. You see, if you go to Krishna, whatever brings you to Krishna, that thing is good. You understand? That thing is transcendental. Even though you may have, in the beginning, some contamination of jnana or karma or some fruit of desires. But at least we see that Dhruva Maharaj went to the right place. Luckily, his mother was a devotee. So she said, if you want to fulfill your desires, you go to God, you go to Krishna. So he said, okay, tell me where this Krishna is. Oh, I see that the sages find him in the forest. Okay, I will go to the forest. So by his great tapasya, he actually captured the heart of Lord Narayan, Paramatma. The Lord was in his heart, became so much affected by Dhruva's determination. And by the mercy of Paramatma, the Lord in the heart, he got the association with Narada Muni. So things we can learn from this are very important. If you have very strong desire, Krishna will make all arrangements. Don't be bewildered that, oh, maybe somehow that I can't go back to Godhead. No, you can go back, no matter what the material situation. There are no material impediments for catching Krishna. This is a very important example from the story. Here's a boy, 5 years of age, who walked into the forest. He didn't know what to expect. He didn't know what he was looking for. He didn't know what he was doing. But he had single-minded determination. That determination is the price of getting things. You see, even in the material world, without determination, who gets anything? Isn't it? So don't think that, oh, because I'm not a kami, therefore I shouldn't be determined. Only kamis are determined. As a devotee, I have to give up these material things, Prabhu. Like determination. These are very bad. We don't want to associate ourselves with these greedy, lusty materialists. Rather, I would just sit back and get fat and lazy and become a very nice devotee because I didn't do anything. No, we should become very determined. Prabhupada said that your determination, this determination, as Krishna says, drihavrita, those are my, they're my doing, they're drihavrita. They are with great determination, great determination of faith. They offer devotion. They worship me in devotion. They offer love, homage. No, they offer homage unto me. They worship me with devotion, with great determination of faith. One needs that determination. From that determination, the super soul becomes, as Krishna says, yeyamam prapadyante. As one becomes more determined, Krishna says, I reciprocate. I am in the heart. Krishna is there in your heart. He is reciprocating with every single aspiration you have. Every single desire, Krishna is observing that. He says, I am sitting there as witness. So Krishna is witnessing the heart of the individual. So he wants to see what's going on in that heart. So within that heart, if one has a great sense of determination to capture Krishna, then this is the price. This is the price. Dhruva Maharaj wasn't in ISKCON. You'd be surprised to know. He had nothing to do with any organization. He didn't have a temple commander. He didn't have a Sankirtan leader. He didn't have a group of devotees who constantly nagged him about a mess he was making in his room. No. He was simple. One person. Young boy, 5 years of age. But he had great determination. You see? So, understand that this Chaita Guru, the Lord in the heart, he arranged everything. Krishna says, I am in the heart, I am directing. Samittitani, I'm directing the wanderings. I'm giving direction. Don't think that you're alone. This is a very wrong idea. You're not alone in this world. You're always with Krishna. The soul can never be separated from Krishna, ever, under any situation. It is only your imagination that makes you think you are separate from Krishna. You are never separate from Krishna. You are with Krishna 24 hours a day. You are with Krishna. But the only thing is, you are turning your face the other way. Your face is turning the other way. You have become distracted, because some foreign, thing has come in. Obstacle. Some thing has come in. Just like when the sunshine is always there, but the big fat cloud blocks it. You see? Sunshine is always there. Krishna is always in our heart. But there's big clouds. Isn't it? Sometimes you see people looking a bit foggy. They look a bit foggy. Because they have a big... Just like when you're on the motorway, and a big fog comes and everyone starts becoming more and more reduced in their vision. More and more scared. More and more worried about what danger lies ahead. So we are similar like that, because on account of our absorption in this tiny little body and this tiny little world, we have lost sight of the great. We have lost sight of Krishna. We have lost sight of what is really going on in this material world. So here is very good instruction by Dhruva Maharaj's complete surrender unto Krishna. When finally Dhruva Maharaj met with Krishna, then, as it says here previously, he actually was embarrassed. Embarrassed to think that he could be chasing after some stupid glass when there was such a big jewel to be obtained. So actually these so-called aspirations of the material world, they are so futile, they are so small, they are so useless. that they are all simply like some bubbles, some soap bubbles. They have no consequence. Everything you gain in this world is just simply some temporary display of material energy. Nobody has held on to anything. Isn't it funny that the history of the creation, nobody has held on to anything in this world. Nobody. Can you think of one single person who's held on to anything? No. So this is not sentimental philosophy, it's a fact of life. There is nothing you will gain in this world that you will hold on to. Nothing. Not a single thing. Even the very body itself will leave you in due time. You will be separated from that thing. So this is separated energy. The material energy is separated because it has nothing to do with the soul. It has nothing to do with us. It is simply a foreign place. We have come here on account of wrong idea. Just like Guru Maharaj had the wrong idea. And by the grace of his Krishna's devotee, he got the right direction. So he could give up that useless baggage. We are all carrying so many useless baggage. We're all carrying around our little bags. Wherever you see people, they've always got these little bags, isn't it? We've all got a little baggage. Oh, I've got my little thing here, and my little thing there, and my little thing there. Sometimes you open the cupboard and it's all these little things. Isn't it? Because they're all our little compartments that we keep our little desires here and desires there. So we are always very protective of these little arrangements that we make in this world. They're always so valuable and so important. Everything is so important. It's so important that I look after my things and I keep everything very nice securely and I make sure that everything is preserved for the future so that later on these things will be there so I can access them. I can access them for my pleasure. You see? These are all the mentality of the mind. The mind is always trying to create some permanency, some situation, some arrangement by which we can stay here and live comfortably ever after. What is they used to say in those fairy tales? And they lived happily ever after. Isn't it? They lived happily ever after. So we want to live happily ever after. So Dhruva Maharaj had that idea, but then when he actually saw Krishna, then these things became like glass. They became simply nonsense. So that is there. So this point that's been made here is that on account of benediction of what? Of befriending the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This word is very important. Onto one who has transcendental qualities due to friendly behavior with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Due to friendly behavior. You see? This discussion is there last night. Our relationship with God is not awe and reverence. We have no business with this awe and reverence. But in the beginning, because we have to mold the mind in a certain way, therefore we have to go through the first 9 cantos so as to develop a sense of awe. Otherwise we will have the wrong idea of God. In other words, one must understand Krishna in truth. But at the same time, the actual goal of understanding Krishna is to develop friendly relationship. Krishna is the lover of the living entity. The living entity is the lover of Krishna. That love is manifested in these 5 different rasas. And out of all of those rasas, the majority of them are actual intimacy. Whose mood is imbibed with intimacy. In other words, there must be intimacy with Krishna. So because Dhruva Maharaj developed this intimate relationship with Krishna, then automatically he became completely in love with all living entities. So this is what is meant by Kaivalya, or oneness. Dhruva Maharaj had a previous to his austerities, he had a totally separated type of mentality. He was measuring everything in certain ways. He was seeing everything in a departmental way. This is my father's kingdom. I want that kingdom. To get that kingdom, I need to do that. I need to do this. So he was making so many arrangements. But then, when he became Krishna conscious, then all of this thing, the crows, the black, dark crows of his material desire flew away. And then he became intimately in love with Krishna. in that love for Krishna, he developed all transcendental qualities. In other words, he developed his real spiritual nature, his real spiritual consciousness. And then he was free from all enviousness. He had no envy in his heart. He had no animosity towards his stepmother, Saruchi. Actually, he had love for her. And because of that, automatically, she, even though she was, as it says previously, she was unfavorable towards Dhruva, but she automatically became overcome with feeling towards Dhruva Maharaj. And Prabhupada explains that this is a natural thing with a devotee. That just like Prabhupada gives a very good example of the Goswamis. The Goswamis of Vrindavan were actually very, very loved by everyone, even by ruffians, even by those who were... Everyone used to come to the Goswamis because the devotee is automatically, naturally decorated with all good qualities. Automatically decorated with all good qualities. And we'll just try to find this particular... But we'll read a couple of qualities just to try and understand the mentality. Now, the Goswamis were previously, Sanatana and Rupa were probably practically prime ministers. They were very big posts. They were not just ordinary. In those days, Prabhupada said their wages were a fortune. They had a whole boat of gold coins. They were practically like millionaires of the land. They gave up everything. They went to Vrindavan. So here it says that I offer my respectful obeisances on the six Goswamis, namely Sri Rupa, Sanatan, Sri Raghunath Bhakta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, Sri Gopala Bhakta Goswami, who are engaged in chanting all the names of the Lord and bowing down in a secluded measurement. They used to bow down. Raghunath Das Goswami would lie prostrated in front of 1,000 Vaishnavas a day. Raghunath Das Goswami was the son of practically a king. His wife was like Lakshmi. He announced everything and he went to live in Vrindavan. He would take one little piece of butter every day or two, and even Prabhupada said he would forget. He would forget. He was so renounced. So every day he would bow down to 1,000 Vaishnavas. If you count how many Vaishnavas you bow to in a day, you can have them on one hand. You say, why? Why should I bow to anyone? Me? Bow to these rascals? These idiots? Me? You think I should bow? This is our mentality. This is our mentality. Me? So important. Me? Bow to people? Who could ever dream of such a horrible act? So we find that although we speak many things, we have no inclination to bow to anyone in reality. We have no inclination to be a servant of anyone. Me? Serve people? Serve? They should be serving me. Don't they know how important they are? These people don't see who they're looking at. They don't understand how great I am. What's going on in this world? Something's gone wrong. Something's dreadfully wrong. People don't recognize who I am. This is bewildering. My qualities are everywhere. My fame, my knowledge. My beauty is earth-shattering. But this is how the mind thinks, even though we may laugh at it. In actuality, if we actually confront the mind, we will find that all poison is there, full of black, dirty snake poison, the mind. The mind is the greatest enemy. It is the reservoir of all conceit, the reservoir of all lusty desires, the reservoir of all egotism. The only reason we don't go mad with our egotism is because it's really hard to convince ourselves of of the things we'd like to think we are. But somehow or other, the nature of this world is it tends to be a little bit like a mirror, and people tend to sort of show us now and again who we really are. So we'd love to be the center of the universe. We'd love to be the best thing that ever happened. We'd love to be so many things. But in reality, we generally can just about get away with tying up our shoelaces, you know. So we kind of like go around like that. But here we find that these examples of the Goswamis, they were so qualified, and yet they were bowing down in secluded measurement. they would bow around Govardhan Hill. I don't know if anyone's ever seen that. It's the most austere practice. They would put a stone, and then you lie dandavats. Then you get up and put the stone again, you lie dandavats. It takes, I don't know how many hours it takes. How long does it take?
That's hard, man.
It takes like days.
Years.
So they were doing that every day. Every day they were doing it. They were practically living on the dust of Vrindavan. You see? So, it says, I offer my respectful obeisances unto six Goswamis, namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Raghunath Bhatta, Raghunath Das, Sri Jiva Goswami, Sri Gopala Bhatta, who were sometimes in the banks of the Radhakund Lake on the shores of the Yamuna, and sometimes in Vamsivat. Thus they appear just like madmen in the full ecstasy of love for Krishna, exhibiting different transcendental symptoms in their bodies, and they were merged in the ecstasy of Krishna consciousness. So this is the point. The one who is merged in the ecstasy. You see? The living entity is always trying to merge. We're always trying to merge with something, isn't it? Usually we want to merge with a good time. But to be merged in the ecstasy of Krishna consciousness, this is why Rupa Maharaj lost all inimical feelings or bad feelings to his stepmother, even though previously he was so angry. But now, because he had actually merged in Krishna consciousness, of course, merging doesn't mean one loses his identity. It means that he actually becomes one with the transcendental, variegated nature of Krishna's transcendental and spiritual energy. So, this of course, the natures of the Goswamis were that they were always engaged, as I said, who are very expert in scrutinizing and studying all of your scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. So this is the point, that the devotee is actually one with Krishna's desire. Prabhupada said, if you want to merge, one should merge with Krishna's desire. That is real oneness. That is real kaivalya. And when one becomes one with Krishna's desire, then he automatically works very hard for the benefit of all human beings. Yes. Because Krishna is always working for the benefit of all human beings. So they were always engaged in putting together all of the religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. And thus, they are honored all over the three worlds. They are honored all over the three worlds. Because actually a devotee is the only one who has the real interest of another entity, another living entity. He's the only one who has the real interest. That other people, they say they have interest, but all of it has contamination. There's always some contamination. This pure interest in other living entities is very difficult for people to have, because we naturally have this contamination of lusty desires, there's so many factors involved. So even when people do good to others, you'll find that there is some motivation, some contamination. There are some exceptional cases of people who are totally dedicated to other people, but generally speaking, there is some contaminated motivation, selfish idea there. So thus they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are well taken shelter because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. So we just finish up here where it talks about, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, he who is satisfied with gain, which comes of its own accord, who is free from all duality and does not envy, and who is steady in both success and failure, is never entangled although performing actions. So this is in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Transcendental Knowledge. So, yadracha labha santoshto. Yadracha means out of its own accord. So a devotee should always be dependent on the activities of Krishna's arrangement. In other words, a devotee is always totally dependent on Krishna. So that is the difference between Kata Aham, it's a Manya thing. Kata Aham means by my endeavor, by my arrangement, by my efforts, by my work. My, I and mine. These are the two diseases of the mind. Everyone always thinking, I did that, therefore, I think, I will do. So this idea, I and mine. Therefore, we hear some other psychology is being introduced. That psychology is that one who is completely free from the duality of success and failure. We should not be disturbed by success and failure. That doesn't mean that we become complacent. We try to do our best to serve Krishna, to please Krishna. But we're not overly disturbed by obstacles. Everything in this world is full of obstacles. So Prabhupada says, a Krishna-conscious person does not make much endeavor even to maintain his body. He is satisfied with gains which are obtained of their own accord. He neither begs nor borrows, but labors honestly as far as in his power. This is very important, as far as in his power, and is satisfied with whatever is obtained by his own honest labor. He is therefore independent. You see, people want to be independent, but they don't understand what independence is. They think independence means that you have some material facility that makes you independent. But it's not. Independent means one who is free from the control of the material energy. So to be free from the control of the material energy means that one has to take shelter of the spiritual energy. So as soon as Dhruva Maharaj took shelter of the spiritual energy, then everything became auspicious. Previous to that, there was inauspiciousness between him and his stepmother. There was inauspiciousness between him and his father. All because of material desire. You see? So, however, for the service of the Lord, he can participate in any kind of action without being disturbed by the duality of the material world. The duality of the material world is felt in terms of heat and cold, or misery and happiness. A Krishna-conscious person is above duality because he does not hesitate to act in any way for the satisfaction of Krishna. You see? He does not hesitate in any way to act for the satisfaction of Krishna. In other words, the devotee's only desire is the satisfaction of Krishna. Everything rests on that principle. Everything. Whatever moves we make, whatever decisions we make, whatever plans we make, whatever ideas we have, they're all resting on the principle of the satisfaction of Krishna. And Krishna's pure devotee. We cannot approach Krishna directly, so we approach Krishna through his pure devotee. Then it says, the work of a man who is unattached to the modes of material nature and who is fully situated in transcendental knowledge merges entirely into transcendence. You see, merges entirely into transcendence. So the living entity does merge. Krishna uses the word merge here. But he merges entirely into this. The word is called praviliyate. Praviliyate. Huh? So, the other word, samagra. Praviliyate. Samagra in total merges entirely. Krishna uses that word. So one actually becomes merged. But merged to what? Not that one becomes one with the void. No, there is no void in Krishna's creation. But one becomes completely in unification with Krishna's desire. And therefore, this is actually what is Vaikuntha. The spiritual world means that everyone there is totally merged in transcendence. They merge in transcendence, so they have no separated interest. Here in the material world, everyone has some separated agenda. Everyone has their own little agenda, their own little plans, their own little aspirations, their own little desires. We all have it. And therefore, you cannot separate desire from the living entity. It's natural to have desire. It's natural to have aspirations. It's natural to have inclinations. It's natural to have propensities. All of these things are completely natural. But what's unnatural is, Krishna is not there. That's unnatural. Krishna is not there. Therefore, we are doing so many things in the material world, and there is no Krishna connection. They have no Krishna connection. So therefore, when we do things which have no connection with Krishna, then they throw us further away from Krishna. They separate us more and more from Krishna. That goes with every thought, word, and deed. We find that sometimes our thoughts are not connected with Krishna. When you entertain them, they become detrimental. You see? they become detrimental. Sometimes our ideas are not connected with Krishna, then they become very dangerous.
And thus is freed from the contamination of the material modes. Material modes means the actual influence of material energies. He can become liberated because he knows his constitutional position in relationship with Krishna. And thus his mind cannot be drawn from Krishna consciousness. Consequently, whatever he does for Krishna, who is the primeval Vishnu. Therefore, all his works are technically sacrifice, because sacrifice aims at satisfying the Supreme Person, Vishnu, Krishna. The result and the action of all such works certainly merges into transcendence, and one does not suffer material effects. So one may ask, what was it that Dhruva Maharaj did that was one with Krishna? What made him? In other words, what was he doing that actually made him in such a high platform?
Looking for Krishna.
He was looking, but what was he doing? What was Dhruva Maharaj doing?
Following instructions of Narada.
And what did Narada instruct him?
To chant.
Chant. So by this chanting of Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, Narada gave him this mantra. Simply by that, he became one with transcendental energy. You understand? That's how powerful this mantra is. That he didn't have to. The other austerities that he did were not the thing, the factor, which actually freed him from the material world. It was actually, one is that because he had a submissive surrender to Narada Muni, he took Narada Muni's instruction very clearly, and therefore he engaged himself in the chanting of Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Then very quickly, within 6 months, he saw Krishna in his heart. So that means he was chanting with great determination and faith. You see? We can chant for 600 years. We may not see Krishna. So we have to be careful. The chanting has to be done with great determination and faith. And therefore, this is the instruction of Lord Chaitanya. Sadahari. Ketanya. Constantly. Always. Always chanting. This chanting of Hare Krishna should go on constantly. And then gradually, one can free the mind from all of these dualities, these misconceptions of the mind, that I am this body, that I'm English, I'm Indian, this is my family, I'm Chinese, this is my mother, this is my grandma, that's my dog, that's my buddy, that's my workman, that's my bag, that's mine, isn't it? That's our mantra for billions of lifetimes. I, now we need to change the mantra. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama Rama. Oh, I can't chant now, I've got something to do. Oh, where's my bag gone? Oh, I can't chant now. Oh, I've got a problem in my mind. Oh, my problems are too much. I can't chant anymore. Isn't it? Because the other mantra comes in, the wrong mantra. That mantra wasn't given to us by Narada Muni. That mantra comes in. Who gave us that mantra? Who gave us that mantra? We need to find out. The I am my mantra. Who gave us that mantra? Maya. Sneaky little Maya. She came in there and dropped a few mantras in our head. The wrong mantras. So therefore, we find that this chanting of Hare Krishna is actually very difficult for those who have too many I and my mantras in their head. But for those who have only Krishna in their head, then they can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. But what do we need? We need Trinada Peace of the Chinna. We need to actually get free from this big, fat, false ego within the mind. This huge, enormous ego that has been consuming us for billions of lifetimes. And there, we can actually taste the holy name. One can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly, without stoppage, no interruption. So this was the beauty of Dhruva Maharaj. He was able to chant the holy name with full faith and devotion. And very quickly the Lord appeared within the lotus of his heart and gave him Krishna pure bhakti, pure prema. So he became one
with Krishna consciousness. So we also have to become one with Krishna's desire, one with Krishna consciousness, and it's a great struggle because of the impediments, these interferences that come from the material world. There's so many interferences coming in. So we have to be always on guard. We have to be seriously on guard from these impediments. They're very nicely broken down by Rupa Goswami in Nectar Devotion. They're very nicely broken down by Sanatana Goswami, by all the great acharyas. They have given us all of these enemies to look for. Who knows some of those enemies? Anyone know any enemies?
Lust and greed.
Too much. What is it? Nectar of instruction. Anyone know?
The tongue, belly, jealous.
Too much. Also, what? Accumulating too many material things. Associating with non-devotees. Kajalpa, Niyamada. Niyamada. Who knows that is? Kajalpa, Niyamada.
Atyahara
graces. Atyahara. What is Atyahara? Collecting too many things in your head. Not very good for spiritual life. Atyahara doesn't just mean having lots of blankets on your bed. It means having a lot of things in your head which you pick up along the way due to inattention. Inattentive while chanting. Inattentive while serving. Inattentive while being a devotee. We pick up too many things. And therefore, that leads to too much association with non-devotees. The mind is a non-devotee. Completely a non-devotee. The mind has no devotional inclination whatsoever. It never will have, and it never has it. So the only thing we can do is we purify this material mind by exposing it to Krishna consciousness. And then we burn it away, just like we want to get rid of some thing. We get a big blowtorch and just burn it. So we have to burn out these material impurities in our heart. And then we will become very dear to everyone because we will become non-different from the transcendental energy, because that is our real nature. Okay, we'll stop here. Is there any questions?
You said that there's no material component to the devotional service. It also said that there's no impediments occupying material energy. And there's no more demons.
Yeah, there's no impediment to spiritual life. Because spiritual life is the real quality, the real nature of the soul. It's just like the example we use sometimes with water. Water is liquid. So there's no impediment to water, but there is an atmospheric association which turns it into ice. So therefore, in one sense, for water to be water is not a problem. But one has to keep out of the atmospheric association that turns it into ice. You understand? In other words, when you have water coming out of a tap, you don't have to make an effort to make it flow, isn't it? It naturally flows. It naturally does everything. But what you do have to do is not put it in an ice cube box. So similarly, we naturally are devotees. We naturally love Krishna. We naturally want to serve Krishna. We naturally want to glorify Krishna. We naturally want to hear about Krishna. We naturally want to offer our love to Krishna. We naturally want to reciprocate with Krishna. But due to association with this Maya atmosphere, material atmosphere, so many obstacles come in. By our association with Sattva, Raja, and Tama, these modes of material nature, so many things come into the heart, so many things come into the mind. So, just like one time in a morning walk, one devotee said to Prabhupada, he said, this Maya is so strong that how Maya is capturing us. He was asking Prabhupada how Maya is capturing us. And Prabhupada pointed to a tree. He said, it's just like if you put your arms around that tree and you're shouting at the tree, let me go! Let me go! Let me go! You big bad tree, let me go! You see? Tree is not doing anything. Matter is a dead energy. it's dead. Matter itself cannot actually overcome the soul. The soul is billions of times more powerful in its association with Krishna. But because we are holding on to this Maya, we are taking shelter of Maya. We are taking shelter there. You know, just like the example of Tathishta Shakti is like the beach. Sometimes the beach is covered with water, sometimes it's dry land. So because we have come in association here, therefore we have become very weak. As living entity, we are very, very weak. Because we're separated from the all-powerful Krishna. Therefore we have become very weak. But as soon as we go back to Krishna, automatically we can become very strong. We can become very strong again. So in one sense, Krishna says that as you surrender, he says that just surrender unto me. What does he say? If you surrender to me, I will protect you. I'll take up the business. It will become my responsibility. You don't have to take such worries on your head. You don't have to worry anymore. It is my business. I will take care. So Krishna is promising that in Gita, that if we surrender unto him, he's saying, I will take care. Don't fear. Don't be in anxiety. Don't worry. These things cannot touch you. They cannot touch you. But if one is not surrendered, then these things become insurmountable. Insurmountable. For those who are non-devotees, the material energy is insurmountable. For those who are devotees, they can easily jump on the head of all obstacles. Just jump over. And you see that. Before, we were so much restricted by simple activity. Everyone has tendency towards these material activities. But as soon as we become devotees, these things become nothing. Isn't it? Nothing. If a devotee sees a beautiful girl, it means nothing. Like seeing wood, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like seeing some wood. Just like Prabhupada said one time, a nice Brahmin tree walked in the room. There was some sannyasis sitting there. So Prabhupada said, isn't she beautiful? And all the sannyasis went. They didn't know what to do. Prabhupada said, isn't she beautiful? And they went, yes, Prabhupada. Of course, the girl was kind of really shocked. She was a little red. The Prabhupada said, So Prabhupada said, so, what are you going to do about it? And they went, what are you going to do about it? And then Prabhupada laughed. He hit his head. Absolutely nothing. And he laughed at him. He said, absolutely nothing. So that's a devotee. He sees everything, but he is not affected. He's not affected. Because he has no lusty desires, no contamination. So therefore he's free. You see? The materialist, as soon as he sees pretty girl, oh, maybe if I go up to her and show my medallion, she'll look at me and say, wow, that guy's got money, he must be a big guy or whatever. It's in the material world, all these little games going on, everyone trying to impress each other. It's all motivated just to get what they want. But for a devotee, he can walk on the heads of all obstacles as if they're just simply nothing. You see? Just like a devotee, if he sees money, he's not the star. He can use it for Krishna, good. If he can't, so what? People may have billions and billions of dollars. So what? It means nothing to them. People may have big, big houses, big, big cars, big, big this, and big, big that. It means a devotee would rather have, a little drop of milk in a cup. Krishna Prasad. You see? So the devotee is not disturbed by all these things. By the grace of Krishna, because he's free from all of these wrong ideas which go on in the mind. But for the materialist, he's working hard day and night, so many different endeavors to capture some little tiny idea. Oh, I'm a big man, I'm this, I'm that, so much this, so much that. So many dreams. So in that way, for a devotee, there's no obstacle. There's no obstacle. The only obstacle we have is we're not sincere. That's all. Otherwise, there's no other obstacle in the path of devotional service. Unfortunate as I am, Lord Chaitanya says, unfortunate as I am, I have no attraction. See, I have no attraction. One can chant 24 hours a day in ecstasy. So much ecstasy that even Lord Brahma hankers for that. But unfortunate as I am, I have no attraction. You see, what we are getting from Lord Chaitanya, even Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, Indra, the great Kuvira, the great demigods, they hanker for that. We are getting offered it without any cost. But unfortunately, we have no attraction. So that's the point. That our real misfortune is that we are allowing so many other things to become a priority in our life. But Krishna is the last on our list. We usually find that our life is made up of so many things except Krishna. Isn't it? So many things. That's why we have to have sadhana, morning, rise early, get up, do our rounds, mangalati, do our rounds, read, hear. We need these things because we have no attraction. We're not attracted to these things. But if we were in the kami world, get up and watch breakfast TV, stick on the cooker, get a bit of this, bit of that, have a nice little girlfriend running around or whatever, we'd love it, we'd have no problems. You see? But in spiritual life, get up, I have to get up again. So we have no attractions, because in the material world, these so-called attractions are very easy because we've surrendered to the modes. We've totally surrendered. We are totally 100% dedicated to the modes of material nature. We are absolutely dedicated. We have not got a flicker of hesitation to serve the modes. But to serve Krishna, that's another thing. So the living entities are 100% fanatically dedicated to the modes of material nature. But to get them dedicated to Krishna is a very big obstacle.
So I have two questions. Can you say something about being attentive?
Being attentive. You see, in the beginning, your attention is based upon faith. Shraddha. You have some faith. So you're told that you should be attentive while chanting. You're told you should be attentive to your service. You're told you should be enthusiastic. You're told so many instructions. And you have faith in those. That's the beginning of spiritual sadhana, is shraddha. You have some faith. Then later on, when you start getting a taste, that becomes nishtha. Nishtha means firm faith. Just like if you went up to someone in the street and said, oh, there's a Harinam next Saturday over here. What's that? Oh, we go up and down streets with drums and carpon. Oh, yeah, keep it up. Keep it up. See? Because there's no taste. Whereas when you tell devotees there's going to be a Harinam, people are running, driving here to get to the Harinam. Because there's taste. So one must have taste. Otherwise you can't be attentive. You must have taste. You have to develop. In the beginning you may have faith, but taste must come. You must have a taste for Krishna consciousness. Don't just be dry, this dry sort of regimental idea of doing things. Prabhupada says don't become hackneyed. Hackneyed means rules and regulations. Rules and regulations are very important, but they're to bring you to a point. You know, just like if you're becoming a car mechanic, you can't just read books for 20 years and still you can't fix anything. Isn't it? You must have some practical, vigyan. Vyan means knowledge. It means that faith in the knowledge. But vigyan means practical experience of that knowledge. Practical experience of it. So therefore, when the experience becomes more, then the attention becomes more. Then it turns into nishtha, firm, very strong. Very strong, and then ruchi. And then one starts to get the real nectar, ruchi. When ruchi comes, everything else is finished. There's no more rules, no more regulations, no more nothing. One is mad after Krishna, like the Goswamis, running here and there. Hey Radha, hey Govinda, And one becomes searching for Krishna, just like Lord Chaitanya. He would be searching day and night for Krishna. Sometimes he would become so obsessed with finding Krishna, he would be simply walking into the wall, chasing. His head would be bleeding from hitting the wall. And sometimes he would walk straight through the wall. And Govinda would come in and not find him. And they find him six days later, down in the ocean, foaming at the mouth. So when you have that kind of attraction, then you have no problem being attentive. But until we reach there, then we have a few little problems. All these, we find as soon as you start your japa, millions of things invade the mind. You start thinking about things you never even thought you could think about. You never even could conceive where those things come from. And then as soon as you stop your japa, they were gone again. Where did they come from? Isn't it? Pick up your japa bag. Yeah, my grandmother, yeah, she used to have this cat. You know, it's a nice cat, actually. You know, and then at the end of japa, you go, that cat? I don't even like that cat. I didn't want that cat. Just ruined my whole japa period thinking about this stupid cat. That's the way the mind works. You see, the mind is always tricky thing. So therefore, millions of things invade our mind. As soon as we have some plan for serving Krishna, oh, I'd love to do it, Prabhu. I really would, but you know. And then we have a whole big list of things why we can't do it. Can anyone clean the kitchen there? Oh, Prabhu, I'd love to clean the kitchen. I've always wanted to clean the kitchen. But it just so happens. Similarly, when we want to do our rounds. Oh, I'd love to do my rounds. I'd love to do some reading. But it just so happens I've got so many important things to do right now. But I'm going to do it later on. So that's the thing. So many things come in there. So these are inattentive or gentle. Inattentive or servant, inattention. Means the mind is somewhere else, not on Krishna. It's found another place to hide. What was the other question?
You're on about the Paramatma, the Krishna thing. And then I saw one lecture and you said, Prabhupada said Krishna's in your heart. And you take that. I didn't know.
The thing is, Krishna.
You remember that quote? Because I really like that. I was really like.
Well, it might be, I mean, Prabhupada said a lot of things about Krishna in your heart, but he said that you should talk to Krishna in your heart, you should listen to Krishna in your heart, you should have a relationship with Krishna in your heart. Krishna's there in your heart. You don't have to look for him anywhere. He's nearer to you than your jugular vein. You can't get any closer. So, we're always looking outside. Looking here, there. But the fact of the matter is, Krishna's right there in your heart, begging you to love him. Begging you to love him. And if you simply turn your face to him, he will make a huge arrangement to capture you. See? So therefore, we simply have to turn to Krishna in our heart. We must have a relationship with Krishna in our heart. It's not some obscure thing. He's right there. Vrindavan is in your heart. All of those pastimes are there in your heart. You can watch them on television. You see? But we are distracted. Somehow we have other distractions. Okay, we'll finish there. Srimad Bhagavatam Mahapuranam Ki Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam Mahapuranam Ki Jai.